This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. Welcome to Cruise Control, the only car review show on radio here in Malaysia. My name is Rich Brandbury. I'm joined in the studio by my friend Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. Say hello.
Hello, Richard.
And then, of course, over here is Mr. Arif Ruse. He's normally the man with the news. A little bit later on, we've got a car review from the Hyundai Elantra, the one without the turbo. And then on our AT&T segment, of course, it's all about saying goodbye to the humble exhaust tailpipe. But first, here's the news with Arif Ruse.
So the first story today, we're going to talk about an electric car startup that wants to treat its cars more like an iPhone.
So with very expensive charging cables that you can only buy from a specific place that wear out after a year.
Pretty much. So this company is actually called Byton, or Bytes on Wheels. It's founded in China by former BMW, Nissan and Tesla executives.
That's where the name came from.
Yeah. When I found out, I was equally as surprised.
Right.
Byton wants you to think of their cars as smart devices, selling you cars based on its tech features rather than its performance. Because according to its CEO, the next 100 years will not be about drivers and passengers, it'll be about users.
Mm-hmm.
And every single seat in a vehicle is going to be equally as important as each other.
What I think the CEO is trying to say is, my cars will drive lousy.
But the robot will drive nice.
But it'll have a lot of tech in the car for you to play with, while you're being distracted by how bad the car drives.
Is that a dig at Apple or a dig at Byton? I'm not entirely sure where we're going with that.
I think it's basically, it's like a cheap handphone.
All right, okay. Wow. Okay, carry on then. Let's hear the rest of this.
Well, you might not be wrong, because the future lineup of cars, a sedan, an SUV and an MPV, it will all be fitted with a whole bunch of futuristic features, like a 49-inch touchscreen in the car right in front of you.
Let me just stop you there. You see, I spoke about this on another show the other
day.
A 49-inch touchscreen in an automated vehicle. Right. It's basically a cinema on wheels.
Yep. Exactly. Yep. Exactly.
Right.
So can you imagine all that distraction, even if you hit someone or you hit an animal,
you'll
still be watching a movie.
Right.
Speaking of touchscreens as well and distraction, there will be a touchscreen in the middle of the steering wheel. And even if you drive it and you turn it, the touchscreen doesn't move.
Wait, if it's 100% autonomous, why do we need a steering wheel in the first place?
You're right.
Safety measures, I guess.
All right.
In case you have to take over.
Yeah, in case you have to take over. Anyway, these Byton cars will also be connected to this thing called Byton Life. It's basically a cloud that activates your vehicle preferences by scanning the faces of your users. So if Daniel comes in this Byton car, and he's on the Byton cloud as well, the car will sync itself to his specifications. So if he usually likes the aircon at number 2, it will set it at number 2. If he likes a certain type of song, it will put out that playlist as well, which is quite interesting, I think.
It's kind of fancy.
And the other thing is that, speaking of autonomous just now, these cars will be equipped with level 4 autonomous tech, which basically means fully autonomous and can operate an entire journey without human intervention.
Mm.
So it can be a reality, because testing for these level 4 autonomous vehicles are already happening.
My personal opinion, and having done a whole bunch of tech shows recently on autonomy, I don't think 2020 is achievable for fully autonomous vehicles.
Definitely not.
Maybe in a closed city.
Right, maybe, yeah. Story number 2 then.
Story number 2 is that Perkema is saying that the open AP system should continue. Perkema is basically the Malaysian Association of Vehicle Importers, and they have expressed concerns about the removal of the AP system that's being planned by the government and that's being called by literally everybody in Malaysia.
Since forever.
They think the open AP system should still be there because it helps the Malaysian auto industry stay competitive, keeping other importers from slapping high price tags on import vehicles. I don't really know what this means, but
I know a man who does. Daniel?
I think I do too.
Oh, thank you for remembering me. Okay, first of all, it's called the Open Approved Permit. It's been around for the longest time. It's basically allowing a certain group of people to become super rich simply because a lot of them actually don't do the business. They just take the APs, they hand it over to a dealer, the dealer does everything.
Is it really that black and white?
I have met some of them many years ago. They actually run the business like that. Of course, over the years, the government has actually forced some of them to actually set up businesses.
Mm.
And if you go and visit these businesses, I tell you honestly, this is BFM. We are honest about it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are going to be upset with me about it, but I will challenge enough people to walk into surprise visit at a lot of these dealers. You will not see any one of the PKMA members sitting in those offices doing the business.
Very interesting.
Now, I'm not saying it's wrong, but we have come to a new government. We have come to a new way of thinking. They call it the open approved permits. Let it be open for all Malaysians. Mm. If you think your business, you're doing so well, what's wrong in allowing people like Arif or Ali or myself to go and get an AP, since it's an open approved permit system, and do the business and challenge you?
That's fair.
You already have your contacts overseas to bring in the cars.
Right.
You already have the shipping lines working for you. You already have the stockyards. You have the physical outlets. So why are you so worried about having it really open? Mm. Now, I've had this argument with a lot of AP holders before, and I said Malaysia should move to exactly like what Singapore does, a COE system.
Okay, what's the COE system?
Now, the COE system, Certificate of Entitlement in Singapore, is basically to control the number of cars sitting in Singapore. Different system. It's open to anybody. It's a bidding system. The government opens a bidding system. So just like in Malaysia now, instead of having this approved system only given to a select few people, why don't you have it open on a bidding system so anybody can go there and say, okay, today I bid, say, 10,000 ringgit for this AP and I want to bring in a Rolls Royce. Okay, please go ahead. Or I want to bid just 5,000 to bring in a Suzuki. It should be open.
Okay,
now, the money, that means, goes back straight to the government. There is no middle person making extra money out of this.
So wait, what are these middle people actually doing? Are they negotiating with like the shipyards and the shippers? Or
no,
what?
They're negotiating with the people to actually finally sell the cars.
I see. Mm.
So in between, there's a lot of money left over. Mm. And that's the money that they're earning.
Mm.
So I'm saying, why are you earning this money just by shoveling a document from the government to another person who's actually selling the vehicle? Okay, there are some AP holders who are actually doing the business complete. You see them running it. You see them doing it. They are not this group of people. So I'm talking about two different groups of people here. But finally, my argument is this. Why can't you have it open like the Singapore system? It's an open bidding. Say every month you have a bidding system. Anybody can go in and say, okay, I bid for, say, 20 APs. I want to bring in 20 Mercedes-Benz from England. They're all 5 years old or 4 years old. Bid, best price wins. Government earns more money.
Mm.
The consumer gets a better deal. Because why?
I was going to ask. You know, how's it going to affect car prices?
People out there will get a better chance to view cars in terms of pricing.
Mm.
Now you just got the select people who have deciding, this is the price we'll put. And then the final seller has to put a markup to cover these people having their yachts and their super bungalows and their homes overseas.
So are we saying essentially then this is why we're paying much more than we should be?
Exactly.
For imported cars?
Of course.
Okay. Right then. That's enough with that. Let's not argue about that. But I'm sure there's going to be some feedback. If you want to get in touch with us, don't forget you can get us on Twitter at BFM Radio. There's a WhatsApp number as well, 018-789-8899. Get us on there. Moving on then to story number three. I'm sorry I'm reporting about Brexit. I'm on the wrong show. We're going to be talking at Suzuki. What's all the big deal, Jimny?
This new 2019 Suzuki Jimny has excited a lot of people in the office, myself included.
Okay.
It's basically the revival of the Japanese Jeep. Two doors, four seats, and a reasonably sized boot with short...
You sound thoroughly excited right now about it.
Well, you know, last week he was talking about how he's excited about big CC, huge SUVs with 4-litre engines. Now he wants to go to a Jimny. I mean, what's wrong with this guy?
One car for every situation.
Okay.
A man can dream.
All right, tell me.
Anyway, yeah, so this car is basically the Japanese Jeep. Short overhangs for rock crawling and mudding purposes, and it's built like a Japanese car. So it's cheap to run and maintain and easy to work on. And this new Jimny matters because the old version was released, I think, sometime in the early 2000s.
Yes.
And it's been a long time, and I feel like this Jimny can revive that Perodua Kumbara spirit.
Mm-hmm. So There's a few Kumbaras knocking around. They don't look so... they could look better.
They could. But it has a spirit.
Mm.
And this new Jimny is powered by a 1.5-litre engine, 101 horsepower, and it basically weighs nothing, 1,100 kilos. And it's going to become a reasonable daily driver too, so you won't suffer if you're driving, say, to Taman Negara to go mudding.
Okay.
But because Suzuki doesn't actually operate here, we can't buy one. right, Daniel?
Yes, well, Suzuki used to be in Malaysia, and they launched the previous Jimny, which was a 1.3. It didn't sell well because it was fully imported from Japan. It wasn't local assembled. So the price was in the 90s. And of course, you see some of them on the road, and mostly in dark green. I don't know why. Apparently, that was the best-selling color, but still, not a lot was sold. Now comes a 1.5 liter. It looks bigger. It looks chunkier. It looks so much better. But Suzuki closed shop in Malaysia.
Full stop.
The Japanese guys, everybody left because Proton did a joint venture with them for the Ertiga, which was an MPV. And at that time, Proton was also talking to Suzuki about taking some other products from them to do local rebadging. But everything has changed now with Proton working for Geely. So Geely, of course, will not want to work with Suzuki. So I think it's about time that Suzuki came back to Malaysia. But how will they come back? Whether with a partner, like before they were with DRB HiCom, which of course now is not popular because DRB HiCom now is with the Proton and Geely. So I think Suzuki should come back here as Suzuki Malaysia or find a new partner, which I'm sure plenty of people will want to partner with them because their small car program is fantastic. But even better news is, you know, Suzuki is huge in India, right? So they make the cars there under Maruti. So I don't see any problem in Suzuki actually taking cars made in India, bringing them to Malaysia, because the price will be very, very attractive.
That is interesting.
Yes. So I'm hoping that someone will think about the Jimny, push start them to say, okay, let's bring Suzuki back, talk to the Indian counterpart, and have these cars coming back in here.
All right. We like that idea. Shall we move on to some new car launches?
Yep. This week, the new Porsche Cayenne, the E3, the third generation.
Are we excited about that as well, Daniel?
Yes. And remember, we talked about this Cayenne last week. We talked about the Sport Turismo.
Right.
And, you know, this Cayenne is priced at $745,000. And the Sport Turismo was $990,000.
Right. Which didn't get the best of reviews, did it?
So, internally, it looks exactly the same.
All right.
Okay.
What else?
The next car that was released was quite big in my books, the Kia Stinger.
Ah, this I like.
I'm so excited for it.
I really
want to test drive one. So, Kia, if you're listening, you know.
Yes. Brembo brakes, the whole works. This car is just bang for your buck. Money in the bank, you cannot go wrong with this car. The problem is, Malaysians will look at that Kia badge and say, $200,000? $200,000 for a Kia? And that's exactly all the comments that came in after I posted this online. The thing is, stop looking at the badge. Look at what you're getting. This car was designed in Germany. It was tested in Germany. It was put through tests right alongside BMW, Audi and Mercedes. And the people at Kia in Germany said, I want to do better. So they loaded it.
Don't forget, the boss who designed the Kia Stinger was actually the former BMW M boss.
Yes.
Who made famous BMW's rear wheel drive chassis.
Yes.
So this is a proper car.
So it's a proper car. Yeah. Are we adding, is value being added then simply because it was designed and built in Germany and it has this guy's name attached to it? Is it actually worth this amount of money?
Okay, if I were to dissect this car. Okay, no.
Don't sweet talk it.
I'm not sweet talking.
Is it worth this amount of money?
It's worth the money because why? If I dissect this car, if I take out all the components, the 2 liter starts at 239. The 3.3 liter is at 309. If I dissect this car, there is no German car that can be priced at this price with the kit that comes with this car. The only problem is the badge.
All right, that's all the time for news we have. Don't go anywhere. Coming up after these messages, we have our AT&T segment. It's all about exhaust tailpipes. This better be exciting, Daniel.
It is.
BFM 89.9 at the Business Station. Welcome back to Cruise Control. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm joined in the studio by Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. Say hello.
Hello, Richard.
Arif Ruse, normally the man with the news. We're going to be talking about... Daniel's going to be schooling us, and Arif will be chipping in, and I'll be pretending I know what to talk about exhaust pipes and why we're saying goodbye to them.
Auto technology and tips, brought to you by Volvo, made by Sweden.
Okay, it's very simple, Richard. As long as I've grown up, every time you go and look at a car, you have to go to the rear of the car and look at the tailpipes.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Yes.
Whether they're twin on one side, twin on each side, one on each side.
Or quad.
You always look at the tailpipes. And then whether they're oval, they're round, they're square, they're rectangular, you keep looking at tailpipes. Now, if you notice, We've got electric cars coming. Mm. Where is the tailpipe?
Well, there is none.
Exactly. And I just noticed this the other day because I was looking at an electric car. And I just went to the rear. You know,
hang on a minute. You write for a car review website and you only just noticed.
I'm sorry, I just noticed. So I went to the rear of the car to look at the aesthetics of the car. And I said, hey, where's the tailpipes? And then I corrected myself and said, oh, it's an electric car. There's
right.
no tailpipes.
Okay.
You know? And then I said to myself, okay, now without tailpipes, that means there's no thrumming sound. There's no vroom. A lot of people around the world who buy cars, at some point they want to get more sound out of the tailpipes. So they go and drill little holes, change the exhaust, buy upmarket exhaust. They spend a lot of money. Now, all that is going to go. The exhaust shop is going to close shop. The whole business is gone in the years to come. But my worry now is this. If you don't have tailpipes, if you don't have the thrumming sound, what do you get then? You get a silent car.
I lived in China for a while.
Okay.
And a few years ago, they were pushing out electric bicycles. And they called them the silent killers. You know, people were crossing the road and a bicycle would obviously hit somebody because they hadn't heard it. So what they started doing was to create electric vehicles with speakers on that sounded like they had an exhaust and an engine.
Yes.
Yeah.
And my first example of this was many years ago when I drove the BMW i8. And the moment we got in, there's a little button that you can change the exhaust sound. So they call that an active sound generator.
Interesting.
Okay. Or some people call it sound actuators. Different manufacturers call it different names. So basically, even modern petrol-driven cars now, small capacity engines like 1.5, 1.6 with turbochargers and all that, to give it that V6 growl, they've already started employing these sound generators and sound actuators. It's been going on already for a few years. It's just that we don't see it because sometimes it's just built in.
Right.
Okay. Now they've got it in electronic form. So you can actually pick the sound you want. So in the future, electric cars will come.
This is brilliant.
Not only with speakers in the cabin, they'll have speakers at the wheel arches and at the back to produce this sound. So my worry is this. Okay, I'm a pedestrian. I'm standing at the side of the road. I'm an old man. Electric car comes along. Young kid, you know, he's probably RAF, you know, he's now 40 years old. He's driving along in his electric car. And he says, hey, I see Daniel there. I will switch my sound from a four-cylinder to a V12.
Right.
And he'll come right alongside me. Now, what happens to the whole emotion of driving a V12 or V8 or V6? It's all gone.
Yeah.
It's all going to be sound generated. The next problem is you'll have young hackers coming in and hacking these modules and start putting in their K-pop and their pimp-pop and their...
I've already seen parts of KL where they do that.
With all this kind of music. And they'll be cruising along playing music from the sound systems.
I've seen Harley Davidson's doing that, you know, with the...
Same thing.
With the huge stereo speakers on.
Right. But those are all added on.
Right, yeah.
So now think about it. You just mentioned Harley Davidson. Mm-hmm. What would a Harley Davidson be without exhaust?
Very true.
When it goes electric at some point, because cars are going electric, the Harley goes electric.
Yeah.
And then what are they going to do? The Ducati goes electric.
Would it take it away from you, Arif, you know, if they remove that sound for you?
I think, yes. The specialness of the car goes, because I like nice sounding cars. I like burbles.
But even, I mean, technology is so advanced now that you could, in fact, you know, install speakers that do sound great and that even, you know, they could even rumble the car so you get that pretend effect like you are on like a, you know. If they could do all of that and convince you, does it really matter?
I tell you, Richard, they've done it. Because when I drove the i8 5 years ago, I heard that rumble on the drive. And I was thinking, how did this come from such a car? And that speaker system, because it's tuned and it's done in such a way, you actually feel it and you feel it in your seat because they've got the vibration. But it's so false. I've grown up knowing that. Arif or my kids next time will not understand that. And they'll probably not even want it. They'll say, what is this? I don't want to hear this. Because I want to sit in my electric car with my 49-inch screen TV and watch a movie while I'm getting to work.
But this is that age-old discussion of generational change, isn't it?
You know, yes.
You know, we like our thing one way. They like their thing another way.
Correct.
And at some point, these are going to clash and one's going to move away from the other. And there's no way to avoid it.
Yes. And to just end this... You play the guitar.
I do, yes.
Yes, and you have a sound box.
I do.
A little amplifier.
That's right.
In the years to come, your guitar will come a built-in
everything.
Digital,
yeah.
Everything.
Yeah.
And then you don't need to be a very good player also.
Well, I'm
guitar
not.
Player.
I'm not.
It'll just play for you.
It'll
and you can just mimic it.
Yeah, there are some guitarists who do that, in fact.
This segment was brought to you by Volvo. Inspiring technology. Shaping tomorrow's mobility.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for our car review of the week. Daniel managed to get his little mitts on the Hyundai Elantra, the non-turbo variant. Couldn't you get a turbo variant?
I've actually driven both.
Okay.
But I thought I'll start with the non-turbo, and then, you know, maybe in weeks to come, I will tell you about the turbo.
All right.
Because if I tell you about the turbo, then you would not be interested in listening about the non-turbo.
All right. Go on then. Okay.
To start with, Hyundai have done pretty well with their previous Elantra.
Mm.
It was local assembled. It was sold for about 80,000 ringgit.
They sold a bunch of them.
Yes. They're nice cars.
Yeah.
But they've got this, what they call fluidic sculpture design, which initially some people didn't accept it. But as you see more and more of it, you start to like it.
Mm.
And it's got very high sides,
yeah.
Very small greenhouse,
yeah.
Big high rear lip.
I actually like the look of it, I'll be honest.
Okay, yeah. You know, some people like it and some people are a little bit subjective about it. But it's done well. Now comes a completely new Elantra. And have you seen it on the road?
No.
That's the thing. It's been around for about almost half a year.
Right.
Really?
It's not selling well at all.
Do we know why?
Okay. The problem is it's no longer local assembled.
Mm.
It's fully imported.
Cha-ching.
Exactly. So the price is $110,000. So $110,000... starts giving a lot of issues in that segment. Because why? You have the Honda Civic,
yep.
Which is about the same price.
What was it selling for before, when it was locally assembled? Can you remember?
Just below 90,000 ringgit.
So
for the base model.
A fair difference.
Yes, so you got a 20,000 odd difference. But of course, this is a brand new shape. It looks more conventional now. It's got a very aggressive front nose. It's got not such a high rear end. The interior is a lot nicer. It actually has the interior of the current Sonata, which is a lot more refined, a lot more entertaining. You've got a very nice infotainment system and all that. But the problem is, people are looking at the Hyundai Elantra and then immediately looking at the Honda Civic.
Yeah.
For the same price, they're both hitch, but I want to go for Honda. Because why? It's got a little bit more space, it's got a little bit more tech, and it's got that understanding that Honda always is a better vehicle.
Right.
That's just a Malaysian thing.
Yeah.
For example, if you go to, say, Australia or New Zealand, Hyundais sell well.
Yeah.
If you go to Singapore, Hyundai sells well. But in Malaysia, Hyundai doesn't sell well. So it's not a product issue. It's how it's been branded, has been perceived.
It's a perception issue.
It's a perception, yes.
Yeah.
So for our country, the problem is people look at Hyundai and say, unless it's priced below $90,000, no, I'm not going to buy a cheap sedan. I'd rather go and buy a Japanese sedan.
Mm.
Now, the Koreans have come so far forward. They've won so many awards. Even recently, Hyundai won an award for build quality and everything else globally. And they actually beat the Japanese. But in Malaysia, they will still not accept this. So let's go past all that. Let's talk about the car itself. You get in the car, it's got a 2-liter engine. It's a very standard 2-liter engine. It's got 152 brake horsepower, which is decent enough. It's got 192 newton meters of torque, which gives you enough power. It's not spiritedly fast, but it'll do the job.
Mm.
It's got a 6-speed auto. Now, a lot of people say, oh, why isn't it dual clutch? Why is it 7-speed and all that? Hello, friend. All this dual clutch, 7-speed, 8-speed, you come and complain later and say, hey, you know, it's not working properly and everything. 6-speed auto, no headache, no problem, very basic. Very, very reliable. That's the word.
I'm going to start using that phrase. Hello, friend.
It's
something I'm going to start using.
Yes,
I like
yes.
that. I like that.
Every time you use it, 20 cents.
All right.
Price, 110,000 ringgit.
Mm.
Okay? But here is the thing. When you buy a Hyundai, you get 5 years warranty. But it also includes a 300,000 kilometer run on it. Now, most manufacturers will give you 5 years with 100,000. So if you happen to use up the 100,000 in 3 years, your warranty ends.
Mm.
Now, how do you use up 300,000 in 5 years? You've got to be a taxi driver.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's a very good warranty. Plus, they give you a 3-year, 50,000 kilometer free service, which the rest don't give.
Mm.
So you're actually saving quite a bit on all the other things. But people don't see this. They still look at the price, 110,000. So when we took it out for a drive, comfort, pretty decent. Driving it, nothing special, but it's a nice car. NVH is good. Connectivity, everything is good. Family liked it, but it wasn't an exciting car. And the problem is when the car is not exciting, people don't really relate to it. So this is basically...
That's why they go for the Honda Civic.
Exactly. So this is basically for you to travel from A to B. But if you wanted something to not be mainstream, You just wanted something your own. If you said, okay, I want that good warranty, I want the good after sales, I want that free service, and I want a headache-free ownership, then you have to look at a Hyundai Elantra 2-liter.
Wow. Hmm. Anything to add?
Well, have you driven the turbo?
Of course.
Because the big thing about turbos is that you get low-end torque, right?
Yes.
And if a car doesn't have a turbo, it can get quite hard to drive comfortably.
No, because this is the same engine that's used in the Sonata. And the Sonata is a bigger car. So in a smaller car like this, it still works very well. There's enough torque to get you going. And you know, people who buy cars like this, generally, if you see Hyundai drivers, they don't have big wheels, big wings, spoilers and everything else. They are people who just want transportation, reliability, and headache-free.
All right. We're going to do the 10-point inspection now.
Okay.
Ready for this?
Okay.
Who is this car for?
I would actually suggest it to middle-income people who are moving up from national cars.
All right. Is it comfortable on the Malaysian roads?
It is comfortable.
Is it fun to drive? Does it handle corners well?
Well, it's not really a fun car to drive. It's a very basic executive car, so I wouldn't say it's fun to drive. The word fun means, you know, I can chug around corners, I can do a bit of twisties and turns and hear the wheels squealing and all that. It's not for that. It's not designed for that.
And is the engine any good? Does it, suit the car?
Yes.
Yeah? Economical?
It is economical.
Is the infotainment system any good?
Yes, because it's got Apple, you know, pairing. Apple, so I've got an old Apple phone, so I paired it, and it worked perfectly fine.
Is it well equipped? USB ports, leather seats, all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
Reverse cameras,
all included.
Is it well built? Soft touch materials.
It is very well built.
Is it value for money?
Okay, this is a tricky bug. Yeah. You see, at 110,000, I can't say value for money because the competition is there. If it was 10,000 ringgit cheaper, actually no, 11,000 ringgit cheaper, it was 99,000 ringgit, that magical mark below 100,000, I think it'll sell a lot more.
Final question then, would you recommend this car?
I would recommend it to someone who's not looking to be flash, because the Honda Civic is flash.
Yeah. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, that's all the time we have for on Cruise Control for this week. If you've only just tuned in, shame on you, you've missed the show. But of course, you can listen back to the podcast. It is available on bfm.my or on the BFM app, which is available on the Apple App Store or Google Play. We talked about the Hyundai Elantra, the non-turbo version. Our AT&T segment this week was all about saying goodbye to exhaust tailpipes. I've had Daniel Fernandez from bsf.my in the studio alongside Arif Rubens. My name is Richard Bradbury for BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.